From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for April 22nd, 2022. Your Milwaukee Brewers are spending most of next week in Pennsylvania with the Phillies and the Pirates, but they have to squeeze in one home game on Monday with the San Francisco Giants. Who drew up this schedule, and just how much beer was involved? A Maryland man who kept 100 snakes in his house, including cobras and black mambas, has died. Yep, he was bitten by one of his snakes. The medical examiner said, if you have 100 poisonous snakes in your house and one bites you and you die, you didn't die from snake bite. He believes you died of natural causes. Remember when you were all dressed up for a wedding and then you remembered, oh, I need gas. So let's jump in the Wayback Machine when gas station attendants would pump your gas, wash your windows, and give you green stamps. I remember this because I'm 100 years old. But New Jersey, the home of Bruce Springsteen and Tony Soprano, is the only state in the union where it's still illegal to pump your own gas. The upside is you didn't go to the wedding smelling like Ethel. And for the kids listening today, Ethel is what we call premium. The state of Wyoming has a new phone app for claiming roadkill. That's right, you run it over with your car, you can keep it, you can cook it, and you can eat it. Maybe that app will help you pair your roadkill with a nice Chianti. Chicago drivers were issued more speeding tickets in 2021 than there are people living in Chicago. Doing the math, the cops wrote 7,700 tickets a day, or 2.8 million tickets for the year, and that's a rate of one ticket every 11 seconds. Jeez. This is where I have to admit to a guilty pleasure. Whenever I see a car with Illinois plates pulled over by the State Patrol, it kind of puts a smile on my face. All right, on the podcast today, we have Steve Giles, Chris Evers, Paige Ratke, Joel Dreising, and wrapping up the week, here's Brian Kilb.
Thanks, Max. Got to be careful with the Bulls and the Bucks series. more Illinois worries. So it was a pretty good week until today. Things took a turn for the worse, and we ended up the week some pretty ugly numbers. The NASDAQ down 3.8%, closing at 12,839. The S&P down 2.7%. That's 121 points to end at 4,272. The Dow Jones Industrial Average down 1.9% to close at 33,811, down 640 points for the week. The 10-year Treasury, which I think has been something to watch and something we should talk about here, up to 2.9% after beginning the year at close to 1.5%. So, tough week. Lots of stuff going on. I kind of felt like we did the show last week. There weren't a lot of things to talk about. It feels like there's a million things to talk about this week for some reason. So maybe we'll start with a quiz. Who wants to chime in as to when the S&P 500 crossed 4,300 for the first time? Anybody? Steve, you're looking at your nose. Come on.
I'm not allowed to answer because you asked me already.
Anybody? So last June. So last June is the answer, right? So it's been almost a year that we've pretty much treaded water with the S&P closing just a little under 4,300 today. And the reason I bring that up is, you know, you go back a year or more even, we had stretched valuations and we had any number of concerns on the table. And you know what happens when things get pricey is either the prices come down to meet the underlying fundamentals or the underlying fundamentals, and primarily earnings in this case, rise to justify the prices. And I think, you know, we've talked about there being a lot of money in the system and that money maybe propping up prices. And so the logical path might have been for things just to sit still for a while. And I think that's what we've seen for the last year. Now, again, pretty easy for me to pick this point in time and make my case for that. But I wonder what your thoughts are in terms of where we go from here and what do the fundamentals tell you in terms of what happened this week and where we go.
You know, I think it's very interesting, Brian, to start the week by looking back, because most of the reviews that I've been doing with clients, we have been focusing on these worst 3-month, worst 1-year, worst 3-year numbers in their portfolio snapshots. And as bad as the last 3 months has seemed, they still have experienced much worse pullbacks during the global financial crisis of 07 and 08. And people forget that during that period, while the market was down quite substantially, they saw a pullback of anywhere between 12 and 20%, which is a far cry from maybe where they are year to date in 2022.
Well, I think we've talked any number of times in the past few weeks on this show about the resilience of the markets. It's amazing. I mean, if you think of what's happened the last couple of years, you know, the flip side of that is at some point in time, things have to, you know, kind of come back and make some logical sense. And I think so maybe that's where we're trending here, you know, certainly in terms of valuations. And I think maybe the discussion with the Fed this week and where interest rates are going may have a role in that.
I don't want to be, you know, insensitive when a market pullbacks to say it's a good thing, but when we were in the middle of the year last year, there was plenty of talk of, you know, these various stocks that maybe didn't have solid earnings yet or were trading on things other than fundamentals that were going up because of herding mentality, for lack of a better word. You know, people were chasing stocks after seeing such strong returns in 2020, and returns were strong to start the year in 2021 as well. So it's healthy. You know, I hate to say that to have a pullback every now and then, and specifically to see the stocks that were trading not based on fundamentals to be the ones that come down more dramatically. So if you look from an industry makeup on how performance has been over the last 12 months, and you look at things like, you know, energy stocks or financials or materials, you know, they're holding up okay. But then you look at some of the technology and communication services stocks, and it's a whole different story. So, you know, I hate to be insensitive, but every now and then it's good to see a pullback in areas that get ahead of themselves.
Well, and to your point, I think Netflix may be the poster child for kind of some of, you know, I mean, again, you know, trying to read into the story. you know, what does Netflix tell us from this week? You know, I think we've been through a strong period of people paying up for stocks because there's been a lot of money out there. And what did you pay attention to when you were buying that stock? Well, was Netflix worth $700 a share or what it got close to? And I don't know where it closed today, but the low 200s, is it, you know, should we have punished it as much as 200? But, you know, what happened? You know, they lost some subscribers. It threatens revenues, which threatens profitabilities. And all of a sudden, everybody woke up and went, hey, wait a minute, what are we really paying for this company? And you saw a significant retreat, you know, and what does that tell us about the rest of the market and what should we look for there? Maybe not to that degree, but maybe there's a story there that we should pay attention to.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Brian, looking specifically at Netflix, it's down over 70% from its high in November of 2021.
That seems like a lot.
It seems like a lot, right? But when their subscriber base is being cut the way it has been getting cut, I think a lot of people tried to discount some of the new streaming services that were coming out, didn't realize how much of an impact that was going to have on Netflix, because ultimately it all comes down to content, right? And if they're not producing high quality content, if they're not, you know, producing things that are only on Netflix that are going to bring in new subscribers, well, then really you kind of look at what you got and say, okay, which one of my streaming services am I willing, you know, to move away from? But one thing that's kind of interesting about Netflix is there is a little bit of a dispersion between the response by investors to these results. So their earnings come out, the stock has a huge drop. Meanwhile, most analysts switched their rating from a buy to a neutral. There's only one analyst that covers that stock that decided to move it to a sell. And so really, when you're looking at that type of thing, you have to ask, you know, what makes a neutral versus a sell, and sort of how are these analysts looking at things in different lights?
Well, I think, and there's so much, I mean, again, I don't want to read too much into the whole Netflix thing, but there's so many layers of that story, I think. And, you know, like all of a sudden people are paying attention to earnings. Oh, did I forget to do that a year ago? Or oh, there's competition. There might be another carrier or another provider, or we've lost some subscribers or whatever. You know, we go through periods where people perhaps don't pay as much attention to the fundamentals and the underlying things that should drive stocks, like earnings and interest rates. And then there are periods where you have kind of a, you know, a coming to Jesus, so to speak, and where you're like, oh, look at that. We've lost subscribers. Oh, my gosh. You know, and then, oh, by the way, interest rates are up a little bit and I have to pay attention to what I'm really paying for these things. And I think, you know, that's my take from Netflix and this week, is it may be an indication that people are getting more serious about the underlying fundamentals. And as interest rates rise, you know, trimming back on their expectations for growth because the discount rate's higher and that sort of things. Now, we'll see where it goes from here. But
And that's not a bad thing, Brian. That's not a bad thing. You know, to Chris's point, when you go through these periods of being able to wring out some excess, that's healthy for the markets longer term. Longer term, you want to have periods like we're experiencing now. And I think it argues for continued balance and continued diversification in your accounts. Those investors that were over-allocated to certain sectors are certainly maybe wishing now that they weren't as much.
Well, and I think, too, I mean, kind of going back to what Chris said, I mean, this kind of makes sense. I like when it makes sense. I don't necessarily like that we had to lose a bunch of money for it to make sense, but I like that the underlying, that what people are paying attention to, kind of makes sense, and that the market's behaving the way it should behave as interest rise and as earnings are put, you know, to task, at least in this one company. And I don't necessarily, you know, I'd like it to make sense and have us make a bunch of money, but it doesn't always work that way. So I think there's some settling out of that I think is worth talking about.
So if the market is experiencing these periods of weakness because of a revaluation of corporate earnings, and we talk about earnings and interest rates being what drives the markets longer term, let's talk about the interest rate side, Brian. At what point
is there anything going on there, Steve? Yeah.
At what point do we have to focus more of our attention on the interest rate side as it relates to what the Fed is doing and how this may impact inflation moving forward?
Well, isn't the answer maybe that's what's happening now? I mean, maybe the question that I would ask is, why weren't we paying attention to this before? You know, and I think the amazing thing about the last couple of years, going back to where we started this thing, is, you know, this thing in Ukraine is amazing, you know, and really that didn't knock the market off. And we had a global pandemic. It was like, I'm old, man. That was unprecedented. I see stuff like that all the time. And forest fires and social unrest and all these different things. And none of that mattered. But maybe now, because it is about interest rates and earnings, that interest rates maybe are going to be the story going forward. And maybe for whatever reason, people have decided to start paying attention to that now. I don't know. Maybe that's the answer.
We've talked about how interest rates matter a lot for stocks in terms of discounting those future cash flows. But the other way to look at it, and a way I like to think of it at times as well, is interest rates are competition for investors' cash, right? So as interest rates get higher, you know, we talked in the past when interest rates were incredibly low, not to say that they're still not pretty low at historical standards, but, you know, in the 1% range for treasury bonds, you know, people said, what else am I supposed to do other than buy stocks when I get paid nothing on safe investments? Well, you know, we're sitting at a 10-year treasury at, you know, north of 2.9%, getting close to 3. Okay, maybe there is an alternative, right? So there is competition for investors' cash. And if you looked at corporate bonds, maybe that number is closer to 3.5% for a higher credit quality corporate bond. So as investors look out and interest rates get higher, it can cause a rotation of people moving some of their money from aggressive stocks at high valuations to an area of the market where you can get paid a little something because rates have gone up.
And, you know, Chris superimposed those comments with respect to interest rates on top of inflation. We all have been hearing that by raising interest rates, the Fed hopes to tamp down inflation. The idea there is, if you make what's in your savings account or if you make what is paying a fixed income rate competitive enough, you're less inclined to take that low-yielding cash in the bank for fear of losing purchasing power in 6 months or a year and buying something now because prices keep going up and then sitting on that money instead because you're going to get 4 or 5% in an interest rate yield. Or if housing continues to see an increase in those 30-year fixed mortgage rates, right? We hit a 12-year high. 5.11% on a 30-year fixed mortgage rate this year. One way to cool down the housing market is to make it more expensive to borrow that money. And that, in turn, will help to slow down a sector and an industry that has really been seeing some inflationary pressures as far as real estate is concerned.
And, Steve, if you do the math on those rising mortgage rates, one of the things that you look at is really on average that increase in the mortgage rate amounts to an increase in $500 per month in what people are paying for their mortgages.
From a 30-year fixed?
30-year fixed rate standpoint. Yep. So when you look at that, you know, there's two factors at play. One is we're still seeing the housing market be pretty resilient to those increases in mortgage rates because people have put off buying homes and they're still interested in doing so. But when we talk about how the Federal Reserve moves can impact inflation, it's not just in the housing market, but if you're spending $500 more a month on your mortgage payments, you're not spending that $500 on something else.
And Paige, that's what the National Association of Realtors said this week when they came out with their existing home sales numbers that showed that they were down for the second month in a row. And now they're saying that transactions are going to be 10% lower this year than they were last year. And so, you know, to Steve's point, I mean, these higher mortgage rates are starting to put a crimp in the demand for housing. And it's interesting because it's at the same time that we got a report this week from the Commerce Department that housing under construction is now the greatest it's been since 1973. It's near an all-time record. So we've got the supply coming up just as the demand seems to start petering off.
It's funny how that works, right? Yeah, I think it kind of transitions to another point that you made when we were talking earlier in the day, Joel. You know, because then I kind of think, well, certainly interest rates and the impact that rising interest rates has is not surprising to any of us, and maybe it is being felt in stocks right now. But then there's a question about how much of what's going on inflation-wise is really, relative to interest rates and inflation, right? How much of it is a monetary issue, you know, and the term you use, temporal in nature, you know, how much of the supply and demand issues that we have right now are temporal and will be directly attributable to the rise in interest rates or due to some other things. And I think it's hard for me, and again, I'm not a PhD economist, but it's hard for me to believe that some of this isn't a monetary phenomena. But it's also hard for me to believe that there aren't a lot of other more practical things like circuit board shortages and labor shortages that are contributing to inflation. So,
yeah, Brian, I think that's a very important point. And because inflation right now, you know, we don't like to say it's different this time. That's a buzzword that we don't want in the financial world. But, you know, it's a global issue right now. Inflation is over 5% in 58% of advanced economies. It's over 7% in 55% of emerging economies. So when we're talking about inflation as a concern, interest rates impact the U.S. market, you know, maybe to some extent international, but really that's not going to solve the inflation problem. And really it comes down to supply chain concerns continuing to be one of the big problems. And, you know, I had drinks with a couple guys last night who work in the manufacturing field. And one of the things that they were talking about is that right now, if they have a customer who needs a new part for one of their pieces of machinery, it is a one-year lag across the board to get them those products. And, you know, for all these different businesses, they're looking at that and saying, phew, I can't wait 1 year to get this machine back up and running. And so, you know, both of these guys that I was talking to said that they have had to turn to eBay to purchase parts for their manufacturing partners. And they're doing that analysis and saying, look, we can get you this part. We don't know what the price is going to be. It's probably going to be more expensive. We can't guarantee that it's going to work. But manufacturers are weighing their options, and they'd rather pay up a little bit and have that uncertainty than know for certain that they're not going to get the part they need in over a year.
Well, and, you know, I think we could all attribute a bunch of that to COVID. You know, I think that then there was the whole circuit board thing. Well, now, you know, this nonsense in Ukraine is going to cause all kinds of problems. And then, you know, you got 25 million people in Shanghai locked in their closets, you know. So you're like, all these things. I don't know if you guys saw this overlay of the shipping, the freighters in the port of Shanghai, whatever that port's called, I don't know. But it's stunning how many ships with a bunch of stuff on them are just sitting there going,
Long Beach look like
nothing,
yeah, right?
It did. I mean, it was nuts, you know. And we're all going to feel that at some point in time in terms of parts supplied or electronics or whatever. So I think, you know, the idea of how temporal in nature some of this stuff is, I think some of it's going to be around for a while and some of it's going to be more challenging than we might have guessed. We were talking about housing stuff there, Joel. Is there anything else on the list of stuff that caught your attention
sure.
this week?
Well, you know, the leading economic indicators from the Conference Board, the Conference Board looks at all of these different measures, and they're actually saying, it's still a strong economy. We're still going to be seeing growth this year. We're still going to be growing despite inflation, despite rising interest rates, despite the war in Ukraine, despite the tight labor market. So there's something to that. I mean, at least with all of these other things that we're concerned about, there's still demand that's seen out there for keeping the economy going.
Well, and I'm a part of that process, Joel. We needed a new dishwasher, and when the seller says,
"Don't you still have teenagers in your house?"
No, yeah, I do have one teenager still in the house. But when you hear that it's going to take 6 months for delivery, you don't balk at that and say, forget you, because everybody's going to give you the same answer. You place the order and you get in line, and you just wait and you wait and you wait and you wait, and that demand isn't diminishing, which is why we're struggling with higher inflationary costs.
And if you look at suppliers, they're stuck in this difficult position of, okay, how do I bring more supply online? I have a hard time finding the labor because we're at a pretty tight labor market. And how consistent will this demand be looking out multiple years? Do I want to invest in new, property, plant, and equipment that might meet today's level of demand, but I'm not certain about what next year or 2024 or 2025's demand will be? So, typically you'd like to see supply be a little bit more responsive to this increase in demand, but I think a lot of people in, C-suite are sitting around thinking, man, it might not be smart. We'll protect the margin at this time.
And Brian, there was a report this week by the Pew Memorial Trust where they found that actually a good number of people, millions of people, are still, because of the housing and people who are looking for financing for the smaller housing that's not being built, that there's still a tight crunch for, that they've been going to alternate sorts of financing things, the sorts of things that got people in trouble, back in the housing crisis that was part of the financial crisis back in 2008.
Yeah, interesting stuff.
That'd be interesting to watch, because if you look at the high-level data on, foreclosures and bankruptcies and, look at the FICO scores of the current loan application data, they still remain really strong. So you hadn't really seen, up until, if this is the case that some of this is changing, you hadn't really seen people taking on homes that they couldn't afford from a FICO standpoint. Everybody I talked to that's looked to try to get a mortgage has made it seem like the bank did not make it a fun, easy experience. it was in 2006 where it was, do you have a pulse and do you have a job maybe that you worked at 5 years ago that you could give us as a reference? They're checking all their boxes today.
The Pew Research found that 1 in 15 of current buyers, especially in the low-income area, they're being turned away from banks. I mean, they can't, that's not an avenue for them, so they're going to riskier ways of borrowing.
Yeah, a lot of funny stuff going on. And then meanwhile, the dollar is just like, the highest against the yen in 20 years. And you think, I remember this thought back in the financial crisis that all these things were going on, and yet the U.S., what is the expression we use, the cleanest shirt in the dirty laundry or whatever, that in spite of everything that was challenging and was before us, that the U.S. still seemed to be positioned in a much more favorable way than lots of other nations and stuff. So I guess there's some blessings in that as it relates to the U.S. So I think the next few weeks will be interesting. There'll be lots of stuff to talk about. But I think in terms of this week, probably a pretty good place to wrap things up. Max, what do you think about the Bucks this week? We had a tough game on Wednesday.
They're on the road.
Which is not fun.
Nobody likes to go to Chicago.
Nobody likes to go to Chicago.
Yeah, well, the big weekend is
I like this time of year. There's a lot going on. So it's supposed to be a little nicer day tomorrow. Get out there and enjoy it. We'll see what happens next week. We'll be around next Friday to talk about it again. Thanks for joining us, and have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.